Superman and the Legion of Superheroes.
Welcome to FW Team Up, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
Taking you through a classic superhero team up, Superman and the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics Presents number 13, cover dated September of 1979. And Bass, the Legion has over 20 members on any given day, so only a small subset will appear. Are you going to be happy with that?
I don't know. It's probably going to be okay. I mean, Dawnstar's in there, so I should be fine.
You always like her?
Yeah.
I'm a Dawnstar fan as well. Yeah, I think this is one of the limitations of a book like this, right? You can't really have 20 guest stars. You know, it just wouldn't make sense. We sort of see the whole Legion at one point, maybe. But they've chosen four people, only four.
It's a little low. And to be honest, at least they, you know, they chose the founding members.
Two founding members, yeah, out of the three.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sunboy. Sunboy's not a founding member.
He's a jerk. It's Cosmic Boy.
Cosmic Boy, yeah.
Yeah, they've got like different generations there. Dawnstar is like pretty new at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I could have done with more, especially since, as we'll see, these four aren't necessarily all important. There's like a couple who are important to the plot, and the other ones could have been anybody.
Yeah,
so
really.
As long as they could be anybody, how about throwing in, I don't know, two more? You know, make it six.
You know what? I think that the Legion is one of those groups that you can have a bunch of them and have them be in the background and just be doing their thing. Not necessarily, you know, inside the whole plot.
Yeah, they can be like in the battle in the background.
Yeah, and they're just doing their thing and we don't have to focus on them. Kind of like if you're watching like, The Office. You know, you're not going to be focusing on everybody all the time. Some people are just like, they're doing their thing.
Any large cast show, you know, it's like how many Star Trek episodes don't have Troy in it or something.
But we cry when she's not there.
Oh, do we? depends on the person. Let's start the show off by giving reasons why we like the guest characters. What's so great about the Legion, Bass? And also, how about naming a favorite member as well?
Oh, favorite member, that's tough.
It is, yeah.
There's so many, and it kind of depends on your mood. For this particular comic, I'm going to go with Lightning Lad, just because he has the coolest, I think, the coolest costume.
So what's so great about the Legion generally then?
I just like the whole premise of the Legion. You know, there's this group of superheroes who are, you know, inspired by Superman, who was in the past, and they're in the 30th century, and they have powers, and they come together to be the voice of justice. And I just like the whole premise of it. And I liked, especially when I was younger, because I discovered the Legion when I was pretty young. I think I was about 6 or 7 years old, and somebody gave me a Legion of Superheroes comic book, which was the Lightning Lad, Saturn Girl, Wedding, the Millennium Massacre, I think. It was great. And it was a wedding, so every Legionnaire was there. And Superboy was there.
I mean, Superboy's a Legionnaire. He counts.
Yeah, of course. Although, he was rejected at first. I mean,
well, I think that was more of a prank.
That's an awful prank. I just like the whole idea of these kids being inspired by somebody from the past and doing their own thing, but being inspired to do something good.
I'm a big Legion fan as well, right?
You are.
Well, I'm a member of the Legion of Super Bloggers, etc. You know, I've written a lot about the Legion. I think part of the appeal is that it's mostly self-contained. It's a whole world. It's got its own heroes, its own villains. You know, you don't really normally have to read anything more than just the Legion books if you're a Legion fan. Mm-hmm. And the number of characters, the details of this utopian world, all the planets, all the, you know, it's a lot like Star Trek. It's the same kind of fandom, I think, especially since it is kind of a utopian future, at least until 5 years later. It's a fandom that rewards getting deep into it. And it's not for those who don't have the patience to get that deep into some very specific lore. So I think that, for me, I'm coming to it the same way I come to Star Trek or Doctor Who. It's, you know, like it's just a deep world in and of itself.
Deep and rich. I mean, it's just chock full of everything. I mean, there's future folklore. I mean, it's just so full. No, well, it's a weird thing to say, but it you know.
I completely get it. As far as favorite Legionnaire, I'm with you. It's like, who do we name? And it's not just like, depending on the mood, it's like, well, what era are we talking about? Because, yeah. You know, it's a very different feel from the Silver Age, through the 70s, which we're in now, the big Levitz era, which we're also in now, but through the 80s, the Baxter series, 5 years later, reboot, three boot. Even the three boot has really two separate eras, as does the reboot for that matter. So it, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge what we mean. But I think my first Legion favorite was Chameleon Boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So cool powers, cool look, more alien than the others. But also, I liked his personality. He was kind of acerbic. He was kind of, you know, he was a lot like me.
Maybe at the time.
All the espionage squad stuff. He's got like a rich backstory as a Durlan. So, yeah, Chameleon Boy, I'm going to stick with that. Although on any given day, I might name half a dozen others.
Of course.
Publication history, you're off the hook on this one, Bess.
Woohoo!
I've decided to use my expertise to...
Well, I mean, you did have an extensive podcast about the Legion, so...
Did I?
Didn't you? With Shotgun? No. That wasn't you?
It wasn't a podcast. It was just blogging.
I was just blogging.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So Shotgun and I just read. It was the first time for her. It was not a first time for me, although I think like the later issues were first times.
Okay.
And we covered the entire era. It's like 10 years of comics.
Oh, my Lord. And how was it?
Usually with two series going on at the same time.
That's crazy. How was it rediscovering the whole thing?
Well, the reboot era, it really is like a kind of fresh start. You get like, I think you get the best of all worlds because it kind of has that modern feel of what I was reading in the 80s, mm-hmm. but they're so much younger and they've revived a lot of the dead characters so that you kind of get that Silver Age feel as well. So it's like retelling of the Silver Age, but with a modern sensibility and more defined personalities. And I think they kind of fixed a lot of the characters that were kind of lame and mm-hmm. made them more interesting and gave them better storylines. And the art was, you know, fairly good for most of that, the run. It ends up being like Legion Lost, and there's like the Return of the Legion. It goes pretty far before they go to the three boot. I felt that was kind of a loss. I think... for me, a lot of the new characters in the reboot kind of seem essential now. If you're going to reboot the Legion, which I hope they do, well, they're supposed to soon, or bring us some new Legion comics anyways.
After the whole KO and Darkseid saga that just happened, I mean, it's kind of natural to have like this reboot.
Yeah, I think so. And they've been out of the limelight for a while. I mean, they had their own series or two series for a long time, like decades. And then suddenly nothing. So I'm hoping for more, and I'm hoping for the classic version. Obviously, we need to like soft reboot it. I think that even if you're going to use like the classic version, mm-hmm. the Levitz version, or I think you still need some of those members from the reboot to appear. I think there are characters in there that just seem crucial, whether that's instead of Supergirl Andromeda, whether that's Gates, whether that, you know, there's like some of the new characters seem now essential to the formula. So I'm hoping to see that. Time will tell. It was still a few months out, but they did announce it. So, all right, Legion fans. As far as the history that I'm going to give today, it's a long and convoluted thing. So I'll be specific, and I'll just talk about this version of the Legion.
Yeah.
They first appear to Superboy in Adventure Comics number 247, April 1958. To both troll and recruit him for the 30th century team he inspired. They eventually take over Adventure Comics. And only in 1969 did they move to Action Comics as a backup, then more occasionally in Superboy starting in 1971. Dave Cockrum starts drawing them a year later, and it increases their popularity. There's a four-issue reprint miniseries, which is actually called Legion of Superheroes, which is the first time a book has been called that in 1973. And in 74, Superboy the comic becomes Superboy starring the Legion of Superheroes. And then Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes in 1977. And finally just the Legion of Superheroes in 1980 with issue 259. With 284, Paul Levitz starts writing the Legion and becomes its longest serving writer, with Keith Giffen soon joining as artist and boosting the Legion's popularity to new heights. When DC decides to experiment with direct sales-only titles on better paper, the Legion is selected in 1984 to be one of these so-called Baxter series. And after a year of new material, the retitled Tales of the Legion of Superheroes on newsstands starts reprinting the Baxter stuff for us kids who didn't have access to a comic book shop. And that ends with issue 354 in 1987. The Baxter series ends with issue 63 2 years later, and a year after that, in 1989, Giffen launches the gritty 5 years later era. Within a few issues, there's a small reboot that makes this a different continuity. I can say that because after a couple of actual reboots, Geoff Johns, who just cannot stand it when comics he grew up with have moved on, brings the original continuity back. This reset is kept for the New 52, which has a couple of Legion series, LSH and Legion Lost, using that version of the characters, even if the rest of the DCU has changed. And Levitt is back writing the Legion during the New 52. But then another reboot. So, you know, the Legion is set to make this comeback after recent events. And it looks like it's going to be the original models. We'll see. So let's talk about this particular issue. It's called To Live in Peace, Nevermore, by Paul Levitz, Dick Dillon, Dick Giordano. Superman follows an alien probe to Nervin, a planet caught up in a thousand-year war. But when he tries to stop it, the Legion of Superheroes shows up to tell him he can't interfere with the planet's history because it's destined to ally with Earth to stop a threat from another galaxy. They're hiding the fact that Pete Ross's son has been kidnapped by the aliens and is fated to become the war's greatest hero. Ultimately, Superman turns the war into a war game, saving millions of lives, but still leaves John Ross back there, something Pete can't forgive. Okay. Whew. That's the story in a nutshell. Before we get into it, let's look at that cover by Dillon and Giordano. What do you think of this one? You know, you got your Superman looking kind of youngish. Superman flying towards the four members that are going to be in this issue. Dawnstar, Lightning Lad, Sunboy, and Saturn Girl. And behind them, they're in space. And behind them is sort of the superhighway of spaceships.
Yeah, yeah.
Going around.
It's busy. It's very busy.
The dialogue goes, well, it says the greatest team up of all, time and space. And then Sunboy says, you'll go no further, Superman. Dawnstar says, you must not interfere with this alien race's destiny. And Superman says, but you're condemning them to a thousand-year war. All right, your thoughts.
I rarely say this, but I think this cover is just meh.
Okay.
It's too busy, in my opinion. I mean, composition isn't that bad. I mean, but the whole thing is just full. How do we look at this? And I mean, how do our eyes just go around this?
But you follow the ships.
Yeah, but it's a bit confusing because they're not all the same ships. They're different color ships. There are at least three different color ships. What is going on? So it's confusing. I mean, the only Legionnaire that looks good is Dawnstar, but I mean, that's a given. And Superman looks good too, but the other ones are in this weird crouchy position in space.
It's the camera position because it's slightly over them.
Yeah.
So you're kind of seeing the top of their heads.
Yeah, it's not flattering. It's not the best camera angle ever for this shot. I mean, it's like they have no necks and it's like they're trying to all kick Superman. I don't really know what's going on. They don't look like they're in space.
I see what you mean. Like Saturn Girl seems to be like running. It's a running pose.
They look like they're all in the invisible plane.
Oh, okay.
It looks like Sunboy is like holding on to something to eject. And it's very clanky. I think it's just because all the characters are just too big for the cover. They should have gone either with a better perspective, maybe with, you know, people in the further background, or went with a wider type shot.
Okay. I think some of the oddities are that Lightning Lad is holding his lightning as if it were like a cord.
Snake.
Or a chain. Or it's a little weird looking. I've never been partial to this costume for Saturn Girl, honestly. Too much like a bathing suit. I mean, it's a cool design with the Saturn pin holding it together in the midriff.
Yeah, yeah,
but, yeah. But I just don't feel like, and this may be because I grew up in the reading them in the 80s, but I don't feel like it matches Saturn Girl's personality. Like, she's not supposed to be some sort of bathing beauty type character. I've always seen her, like, when I met her, she was already married to Lightning Lad, so she seemed older. She's one of the founders. She was wearing something much more conservative, and she felt like a more conservative-minded character. So this pink, hot pink bathing suit, for me, I'm sure it's somebody's sexual awakening, but for me, it just doesn't feel like the telepath character. It just doesn't feel.
You're 100% right. The long boots and the long gloves kind of want us to have, it's like it's screaming full suit, not bathing suit.
Strange accessories to a bathing suit. I don't disagree with you particularly. I don't have much hate or love either way. I think it's fine, but because it is so busy, you lose a lot of, you know, it's a confusing kind of cover. All right, let's get into it. And the story starts with Superman punching an alien probe that is trying to kidnap astronauts out of a capsule as it returns to Earth. So this is like an Apollo mission in 1979, which is beyond the actual years that NASA was going to the moon in the 70s. And in the DC universe, I think that makes complete sense.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's a world with more sci-fi elements and people go to Mars and all sorts of weird stuff.
You know, it's kind of a rebirth of that kind of feeling now with the Artemis missions and all of that.
Yeah, definitely. And at this point, we do have a space shuttle that's been invented, but it's not really meant to go to the moon. It's not that kind of... So it's fine that we see like a sort of Apollo-style capsule here. I don't have a problem with that. So Superman doesn't destroy it. He's just like he's twisting the tractor beam thing off of it. You know, Earth's capsule goes back to Earth. And Superman decides to follow the probe back to its home to see what the hell's going on. Several light years later, further, I guess it's not a time. It's a distance.
It's a distance thing. Yeah. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
It makes that spaceship very, very quick.
It's comics. So in comics, I gotta say, the light barrier is very easy to break.
Yeah.
You get a lot of characters are flying in space, you know, the Green Lanterns and Superman. Yeah. Certainly during this era, Superman, you know, he can fly faster than light speed. He can warp. Every ship can warp. And, you know, there's no way we could keep relations with other planets in comics unless we could break this barrier.
Of course.
So Superman can fly as fast as the ship, and he follows it to Nervin. A planet that, you know, where they don't have vowels. And they just have consonants. And they're in the middle of a war or a battle. And he doesn't, Superman doesn't know what these ships are. There's like two different types. They may be local, as far as I know. You know, this may be a civil war.
We don't know what's going on. He walks into a space fight.
And it's not a space fight that makes complete sense. I've got a lot of notes on this. I mean, we're talking about Superman's powers here. Not only can he fly fast, but he can listen to their broadcasts with his super hearing in space when there's no sound and interpret he calls it hyperwave, but I guess he can interpret radio with his mind. And within seconds, minutes at most, he translates their language with his super mind.
Yeah, so they're keeping something from the, I guess, golden age where he had super smarts and super deduction.
I will say silver age. Because
silver age? Yeah, silver age. The weirdness.
Yeah, I mean, those powers escalated quite quickly. I think there's part of the golden age where I would say, you know, Superman can do anything, but it really is silver age. I mean, I know we're in the bronze age, but it's the same Superman. So let's just call it pre-crisis Superman. And pre-crisis Superman has a host of powers that post-crisis Superman either never had or, you know, would only have much later when people didn't care anymore.
Yeah. or maybe he just never mentions it. You know, maybe he can do stuff that we don't know.
He has a super intelligence.
Yeah.
Pre-crisis Superman. So it's kind of believable that he can do this. It's for the story or else, you know, you can't have a story. But he discovers through their transmissions, because I guess they're just recapping their own history, that they are kidnapping people from all over the galaxy to become warriors in their war. They need new strategies. They need new minds. They're just so focused on war that they're developing weapons. They're developing strategies constantly, and they need new blood to do that, to get them out of there. And he thinks that's sick, and, you know, people are dying. And, of course, he wants to stop it.
As he should. as he should. I mean, Superman's always getting into trouble for trying to stop people from dying. Latest movie included, you know, so Superman, that's his thing. He just wants people to, you know, stop fighting and talk for a second.
All right. So he's catching all the ships and he makes a makeshift asteroid basket. and he's catching ships and no one gets hurt, Superman. So he stops the battle. But before he can get further, he says, these ships were robot piloted. Okay. So nobody got hurt, Superman. Okay. Sure.
Yeah. These planets only have a lot of disposable income. You know, you can have robot piloted ships that just go get destroyed.
We'll see some of them have pilots. I mean, he's just catching the ones that, you know, that are robot piloted. So it's fine. But before he can go further and maybe, talk to the planet people and tell them to stop or whatever Superman would do in these situations, the Legion shows up. Or part of the Legion. Four people out of the Legion. A fifth of the Legion.
Yeah. and quite the entrance. It's very Lord of the Rings when, Gandalf comes back as Gandalf the White. You know, you have this big flash of light and there's this no Superman. And you're what? What's going on? You turn the page and you see the Legion or part of the Legion.
Four people because arguably a time bubble only fits four.
Yeah, it's a small thing. It's a small.
So they're posing atop the time bubble. And they tell him, that you can't interfere with this planet's history. It's going to screw up our history. I'm wondering, isn't the Legion interfering at this point? Aren't you the ones interfering? Because you're from the future. But then Superman, as Superboy, also lived in the future. So is he part of events from that time? So he can't change history because it's also his history? I don't know what the reverse temporal prime directive
I'm not sure, but it makes this whole thing very wibbly wobbly, very timey wimey.
Actually, it will be. The climax kind of really is that. They convince Superman that, we live in an era of peace, and that peace begins when the Nivernians, they ally with Earth some years in the future. They need to be in this 1,000-year war, is the thing.
Yeah,
Because they are going to develop weapons and strategies that will help them and their allies, which is Earth, as we see Earth in the flashback or the history, having also starships.
Yeah.
And we're all going after we're all stopping this invasion from another galaxy. And if we don't do that, I don't know, the galaxy gets conquered, the Legion's future never happens, whatever.
Yeah.
So Superman's going to have to take this for granted. Since these are his friends, these are former teammates, he can't believe that he's going to let this 1,000-year war go on. Now, to be fair, when he was listening to their transmissions, he ascertained that this had already been going on for centuries.
Yeah.
So they're in the middle of this millennial war. Again, not clear. But also, they are keeping something from him. And as soon as he leaves, they stop the ships from fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what the hell's going on?
The fact that they are fighting or not fighting in this particular moment, they also have a moral code that they can't let these people die. That's not what they're hiding from him. That's not the reason they want him to leave.
No.
Is that
no.
They don't want him to interfere with this particular battle in a 1,000-year war.
Yeah. It's a particular turning point that will find out soon enough.
We'll get back to it. Page 8, Superman comes back. He has this thought. It's days like this that make me appreciate Earth's peacefulness. What you talking about, Superman?
This was in 1978, right? So
79, but 79. Nevertheless.
So I guess there wasn't any major war, was there? Back, there's always conflict. That's for sure.
So anyway, is it really peaceful? You you have to fight an invasion or a giant robot every 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. But it gave us the opportunity to see Steve Lombard.
Steve Lombard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Who's this jock type, a bit of a jerk.
Clark Kent's bully. Clark Kent's Flash Thompson. Yeah, and he does have a mustache here? I thought
he doesn't. Yeah, he's very clean shaven. I mean, maybe he had a date that night or something.
I knew him as a mustache guy, but I think that's maybe the 80s. So he's growing it.
Yeah, I think the 80s brought the, the mustache, football coach mustache looking type jock, the older jock.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, he's only there to be a jerk and also tell Clark that Pete Ross is here for him. So old friends from Smallville, right? Character from the
Yeah.
The Superboy days. Very occasionally appears in the adult Superman stories. But here he is. And he's despondent. The aliens have kidnapped his own son.
Yeah.
So a few things here. Number one, did they send more than one probe? Like they're catching those astronauts, but this also just happened. So they sent multiple probes to Earth and Superman only caught one, I guess. Or was he in that probe and Superman didn't see him?
I mean, it's all possible or probable.
Or impossible or improbable, but it happened.
Yeah, it happened. So I guess it has to be either possible or probable. I don't know why they grabbed that kid specifically.
You must have had, you know, the vibes, the necessary vibes.
Yeah. Is it this kind of a prophecy type thing? We don't really know why. We know he's that John Ross, J-O-N, we'll talk about that later, but Pete's son is somehow supposed to be there with no explanation. So that's kind of the weird part.
Who knows, you know, why they're choosing certain people? Because astronauts, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you might want to get military officers, that kind of thing. But a boy of, what, 12 or something?
Hardly makes sense, unless it's this weird type.
Yeah, that they have the prophecy the same way that the Legion knows.
Or they have like a time thing where they see the future. But none of that's explained.
Not here, anyways. So John Ross, you want to talk about that. Obviously, yeah. In the current continuity, Superman does have a son. He did call him John, J-O-N. Of course, that's after Jonathan Kent, his father. But yeah, there's already like a John from Smallville.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And it kind of, you know, because we're looking in the past, right? This is, I mean, it's a little time capsule to the past. And all of a sudden, I really had this moment because, I mean, John Kent, he's a major character now. He's just, you know, he's the other Superman. Awesome in his own right, and soon will become a Superboy again, or is back Superboy, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to keep that up, because he's also in New Titans.
I know, I don't
as
know.
As Superman, so I mean, we'll see. We'll see if that's supposed to be like a full reversal. But in any case, he is Jonathan Ross, nicknamed John. So it's the same name. It's not his first appearance.
It's not?
No. He first appeared in 3 years earlier, Action Comics 457.
Oh, wow.
March 1976. And he's appeared a few times. And he's set to reappear as well, even in DC Comics Presents, in our future.
Ooh.
So we'll see maybe like his fate. But yeah, he's appeared a few times, and then the crisis wiped him out. You know, Pete Ross doesn't have a kid, as far as I know, in current continuity, because then like he married Lana Lang instead, and he's, you know, like post-crisis is a very different history. But we'll see more of John Ross later.
Really?
Especially at the end of this, you know, when Pete Ross is like angry at Superman for leaving him there. That is also like a cliffhanger, because the next issue will also deal with the ramifications of this. The other big thing that I did not realize, and that really had not been picked up since, like, for years and years, is that Pete Ross here knows Clark Kent is Superman. He rips his shirt open. It's like, you know, I can't do anything. You know, I'm Clark Kent. What can I do about your son's kidnapping except contact Superman? Now, you know, stop bullshitting me. I know you're Superman. And then he recalls seeing young Clark take his shirt off and be Superboy during a thunderstorm on a camping trip when they were kids.
Is that in a comic book somewhere? Or?
It is.
It is.
So, yes, he was rumbled, I guess. You know, in Superboy number 90, which is quite a while away. So yeah. It took him all these years in universe and out to tell him.
Wow. So Pete really can keep a secret.
Yeah, I guess so. So I mean, Paul Levitz, who's writing this, was one of the original fanzine nerds. So it's not just like reading comics. It's dissecting comics and writing articles about comics. So he was part of that generation that knew all the trivia. So he's bringing that forward from years and years before. And I don't think it never been addressed in modern Superman stories. So that's interesting. Unless it had, and he's like, he's always thinking about it, but he doesn't reveal it to Superman. There's a lot of comics I haven't read from this era, so maybe people in the comments can chime in and tell me how wrong I am. But Nevertheless, it's a big shortcut. It's a good thing Levitz remembered this, because then we don't have to go through the, okay, Clark Kent will contact Superman and Superman's going to have this conversation with Pete, and, you know, conversations. Yeah. We don't need any of that. And of course, the one thing that what the Legion was actually hiding was John Ross's kidnapping. Like, if Superman knows that Pete Ross's kid is here, he's going to take him home right away. We four Legionnaire are no match for Superman. You know, we won't be able to stop him. Our history says that John Ross is to be this planet's greatest hero. Actually, the battle with the other galaxy's greatest hero. That's the reason he has to stay. He's the planet's greatest hero in the future. He's going to be a general in this fight. So he needs to stay and train and become a Nervanian warrior.
We've seen this story before.
Have we?
Well, it's pretty much what the Terminator does, right? He's kind of like John Connor.
So the Legion goes and talks to John, and they try to convince him, if ever Superman contacts you, you want to stay, okay? And it's like, I don't want to stay.
Sometimes in DC Comic Presents, there are these moments where I'm like, are these the same superheroes that I've read before? And this is one of those moments where I really didn't like Saturn Girl, where she tries to use her telepathic powers to convince John that he wants to stay. And I'm like, oh, that's so not cool.
Yeah, they're trying to like cement a history that is going to happen anyway, right? And it's like, if they don't touch it, then everything should go.
Yeah.
You're stopping Superman from interfering, but wouldn't he have interfered in the normal history? So are you trying to confirm your own history, but then you're interfering to try to make it more probable, which is an interesting idea, but it doesn't really conform to DC Comics time travel mechanics. No. There's not like competing timelines. Oh, today there is. There's like multiple legions, and which one is the real legion, and they all have like an amount of probability to them, I guess, but not back then. So this is suspect. I agree. She discovers that John knows the identity of Superman also, because he told him in that previous issue of Action Comics. That story went like, he loses the will to live. Like, he's dying, John Ross.
Yeah.
And Superman gives him the will to live by telling him his secret identity. That saves the boy.
He was depressed. His mom died.
Pete Ross is having a rough time, honestly. Yeah. He lost his wife, and now his son has been kidnapped by aliens.
I mean, he's not having a good day, and Superman is not helping in this. Well, we'll see.
Well, now he wants to, right? It's like, okay, Pete, you know, I'll head off. I didn't know that part of it. And so he flies back to Nervin. And while he's flying there, he suddenly gets a boost of speed. He's double speeds that makes him break the time barrier. He discovers that Dawnstar is right behind him, pushing him into the time barrier with her own speed. That's how physics works, Bas. If you have something going at a certain, if a car goes at a certain speed and another car goes at the same speed and pushes it, they go double speed.
That's exactly how that works.
Velocity is additive, correct?
No. But thing is, Dawnstar can go at the speed of light in space.
I think she can go faster. I think she's just like Superman, because her whole deal is flying through space. I know she's got bird wings, but she flies through space and tracks anything in the galaxy to where it is. So she has to move faster than light speed, because light speed is like years between stars.
Well, you know,
she's like the Silver Surfer. She's just, you know, it's her playground. So I think she is super fast.
She is. When I went and I checked her powers, it said she goes at the speed of light.
I don't believe that for a second.
If she goes faster, she can actually boost Superman with her speed. But
I think she has to go faster. I'm sure there are plenty of comics where she flies in between star systems.
Well,
not possible at light speed.
She probably can. Somebody needs to explain how speed works.
Nevertheless, velocity is not additive. But she pushes him years ahead. And we're going to have to talk about this timeline. But she pushes him to the war with the other galaxy. This is the ultimate battle of the Millennium War. So this is the end of the Millennium, which arguably has been going on for centuries already.
Yeah.
And he sees like the destruction. He tries to stop it. Of course, he fails. Like, she's shocking him into realizing that this thing's going to happen and we will lose unless John Ross is commanding. And he sees how powerful the ships are. Like, he can't stop them, you know.
He gets blasted pretty hard.
So here's my questioning of the Millennium War. If John has to play the hero in this scenario, then it has to happen in his lifetime.
Yeah.
Okay, so does it mean the attack from another galaxy happens in just a few years?
It should be within, I don't know, maybe 30 years, yeah.
And Earth is allying with the Nervernians? Like, we get starships that fast?
It's quite the stretch, but, you know, maybe time is additive.
But I also feel like, the Legion kind of implies it happens closer to their time, right?
Yeah.
So surely it's in hundreds of years. But if it is just in a few years, then Superman's melodramatic claims that he's dooming them to 1,000 years of war is false. They've already been through, 950 years.
Exactly.
And if that's so, how much weapons evolution is actually left to play out for them to win this war?
In theory, they should have maxed out quite a bit. I mean,
a while ago,
technology always, it's not a steady slope. It resembles more of a exponential.
Of course, I can no-prize it. I can say that they made John immortal somehow, they rebuilt him to last hundreds of years.
Yeah.
We could say that. I think that's probably what's really happening. But it's not just in a few years.
Yeah.
But very fuzzy in terms of what we're being asked to believe here or understand.
They're pushing on our suspension of disbelief quite a bit.
I think it all worked until you put John Ross in the mix. Now it has to happen too soon.
They are time travelers. It could have been, it's one word bubble. I mean, we're taking John Ross to the future because that's what happened. And our past is your future, but we created something that we can't undo. They could have been like, all right, John Ross is our savior, but what happened in our past, this is talking from the Legionnaire standpoint, somebody went to the further past, to the ancient times, brought this kid, and this kid just changed everything. So that's our past, but this is in Superman's future. They're trying to save their past while Superman doesn't know that this is part of their future, so I mean, there's a nice conflict, but that's essentially what they're saying. But it's not the Legionnaires who are kidnapping John. It's the Nervanians. And that's where it doesn't make sense.
I would change it to make, put John in some sort of cylinder on the planet. And the Legionnaires go there. They learn, they can talk to him telepathically, but he's in there. And it's like clear that they are going to decant him later. They're going to train him mentally or something. They're going to force grow him.
You can Brainiac all that up. You know, he's plugged in and he becomes like this computer person.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's not a lone hero on a ship. He's running things. His brain is running everything. And
hive mind type thing.
Right. And if you pull him out, then it's like everything is going to collapse. He's not just like one hero. So there are many ways to fix this. And I don't know how later stories with John Ross are going to play out and if it's going to explain things better. But all of this, and here's the interest, the timey-wimey bit, is that all of this was meant to happen, in Legion history, including their interference, Superman's interference and all that, because Superman has like this flash. He says, Lightning Lad, does your history show that Nervin fought with other worlds for 1,000 years, or just that their war lasted that long? And Lightning Lad says, no other world's history mentions this war. Now he wonders, but how else could the Nervanians have developed such advanced weapons if they're not fighting anyone, but they're in a war? Well, first of all, it could be a civil war. But then it's like, Superman's idea is to turn this war, or this conflict, or this will for battle, into a war game. It's all computerized. It's all a simulation. And they can simulate this for 1,000 years or however many centuries or months are left of this war.
Yeah.
You know, again, I don't know. But they're already reusing robot ships, you know, so they're not too far from this. And this fake war is going to train them up and evolve their weapons. And when the other galaxy attacks, they'll be ready, even though they didn't kill anyone. They didn't go to war with anyone. And from this point on, don't need to kidnap anyone else. And since the Legion history shows that no other planets were involved in the Millennium War, well, then it seems to say that this solution was always going to happen.
Very timey-wimey. So instead of having a real war, they just had a, you know, war games. Basically, video games.
The whole thing is run by Superman robots.
Of course it is.
Which are donated by Superman. And I mean, that page, 16, where you see the Superman robots and they're kind of setting up. This is the part where the other Legionnaires show up. I guess they helped set it up. We just didn't see it. But they built this globe or whatever. The center of this war game. But you see them in the background and you can't tell anyone from anyone. But there's like time spheres there. And they're all in little groups of four. I guess the whole Legion did show up.
It would have been fun just to see a bit of, you know, just pieces of the iconic costumes or...
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
This is the thing about the Legion, right? It's like in many ways they all wear this like spandex leotard. They all kind of look the same. They're just boys and girls with different patterns or colors. And it's so, you know, all of those old make your own superhero software things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're kind of just like... They're kind of like that, where you just like you have your figure and you could draw on it maybe, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of look like that. Especially at this point, it's hard to say who anyone is. You know, maybe they could have had Colossal Boy be big or something. I don't know.
Yeah, at least have a little something, but, you know.
I even wonder, like, did the artist kind of research it to have, like, the right number of women?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
There seems to be one, two... Four girls.
Plus Saturn Girl, who's on the floor. I don't know. It doesn't seem enough.
Doesn't seem enough, yeah.
No, it doesn't seem enough. So I don't know who, you know, whatever. At least they tried to get the whole Legion in there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So we're going to leave this war game to do what it does. But Superman does leave John there.
Yeah.
To fulfill his destiny. So once we get back to WGBS, Superman and Pete Ross have a talk. And Superman tells him, you know, there's just some stuff I can't do.
Yeah.
Some things are beyond my power, like this. And Pete, Superman's best friend as a boy, and I don't think he's ever been replaced. Like, Superman doesn't have, like, Clark Kent. Superman has maybe Batman in this era, who's supposed to be his best friend.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have, like, a civilian best friend.
No, not really. Well, Jimmy thinks he is. But
Jimmy, yeah, maybe.
I don't think that Superman calls Jimmy. Jimmy always calls Superman, but, you know, I don't think Superman calls Jimmy.
Well, I mean, it's not about Superman can have, like, his superhero friends, but does Clark Kent hang out with anyone?
Lois?
I guess he is, well, that's more of a love interest thing. So he doesn't really have a best friend like he did back in the day. Like, Pete Ross fills a role that is not filled by anyone in the modern.
I mean, it's very sad that, you know, Clark's friend... He has to break this awful news, and I mean, he would have flown the Earth backwards to get Lois back, but...
So Pete Ross is leaving, like, but you'll pay for this. So there's, like, a revenge plot brewing, and the payoff will be in the next issue, Superman versus Superboy. Oh, okay. So more time travel shenanigans, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
As for John Ross, I can tell you that the answer to his fate lies a year in the future... for DC Comics Presents.
Oh.
So a year later, they will come back to this plot line and maybe undo it.
I'll have to go read it before we get to it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, bottom line, I'm not sure we needed all those Legionnaires after all, because, you know, Dawnstar is the one who pushes Superman into the future.
Yeah.
Saturn Girl, more germane to the plot. You know, you need her for the Legionnaires to speak to each other in space, and she tries to probe the boy's mind, and she seems more active in the, yes, Superman, let's do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the other ones could have been anybody.
I mean, anybody with a blast, you know, because...
A fighting power.
Because, I mean, Lightning Lad and Sun Boy, they basically have the same power. They have energy expulsion from their hands. So they're basically same character, but...
Probably the easiest to fit into a battle, a space battle. Like a Super Stringster or, you know, I'm not too sure who is a member at this point, who's retired, who's kind of inactive and so on. But nevertheless, it's like, it'd be harder to have... somebody, you know, like a Shadow Lass or something. It's not like the same kind of fighting powers. Again, I would have liked to see more people in the frame.
I think they went for probably the best color palette. I don't know how they chose.
No, it's a good pink, red, blue, yellow. You get a bit of everybody. Is there a green member we could have put in here? All right, who fared better? First, let's see who's... atmosphere or story this is. Is this a Superman story or is more of a Legion story? Because John Ross is definitely a Superman character.
Yeah.
But it's all about protecting the Legion's future. So what do you think?
Honestly, it's Superman that saves the Legion's future. So, you know, this is a Superman story.
Yeah. Did they just crash our time?
Yeah, basically.
If it were in the 30th century, then I'd give it to them. But, and there's not enough of them anyways. It doesn't. What about... cool moves. Superman's coolest move?
You know what? I'm going to give it to the weird decrypting of the alien language with the super hearing. I know it's weird and it's improbable, but it's kind of cool if he does that. There's so many layers to that. It has to be the coolest move.
I mean, arguably, it's his anti-war solution. He comes up with that. But I'm still going to go with something more physical. I think the asteroid basket is real crazy.
It is. It is.
He takes a whole planetoid, he empties it out, makes it into a basket that can catch multiple ships. It's a very pre-crisis Superman kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. If Green Lantern was there, it would have been in a baseball glove. It's kind of cool. Yeah, I agree.
What about the Legions?
Anything Dawnstar does. I just love her, except the whole pushing Superman faster because she's technically slower. But anyways,
she's technically slower in terms of limit because Superman is like Flash. But still, at that point, he wasn't trying to break the time barrier, which he can do on his own. She makes him do it. Anyway, I think that I'll go against you and say that Dawnstar pushing Superman to time travel speeds is the coolest move the Legion does. And that is not to say that it isn't a particularly cool move. But they don't do much.
Don't get me wrong. It's a cool move. That's not how it works. Unless, of course, I'm wrong and Dawnstar is faster.
And it may be a contender for dumb or weird moves. What do you think is, let's start with Superman's first.
I think it was a dumb move. And, you know, when he goes all into the great millennium battle, you know, the end of the war and he gets shot by everybody. That was just a dumb move. That was just,
pointless.
Yeah, it did nothing. He only got himself shot.
And I'm wondering, and this is more of it's a dumb move mentally. How is stopping a war on another planet any different from stopping a war on Earth? He wouldn't do it on Earth, but he does do it on alien worlds. And I think that's his colonizing spirit, I think, is dumb.
You know what? I think you just called it. Yeah.
What about the Legion's dumbest or weirdest move? Do we go with Dawnstar or is there more?
No. I think the move that kind of I didn't really like was when Saturn Girl used her power to try and force John Ross to accept his fate. And that's just a sketchy or cringe, as the kids say.
Did they still say that? Or is it cringe to say cringe?
I'm an old man. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not going to give it to Dawnstar. Obviously, I thought it was cool. But I think Lightning Lad and Sun Boy are just lame ducks here.
They don't do much.
Where's Wildfire in this?
Exactly.
You put Wildfire in there, he's got more personality. He loves Dawnstar, so there's there's something there. Could have done a little bit of more subplotting, I guess. And he's a blaster.
Isn't he from Earth?
Yes, he is an Earthman, so maybe he has more of a stake.
Yeah.
Well, so is Sunboy, honestly.
Oh, okay.
All right. What about the friendly farewell? Superman, you're the greatest. And then an unfriendly farewell with P. Ross, but we're really looking at Superman and the Legion.
It felt like Superman was seeing old friends. The way he talks to them, the way he kind of keeps his composure, even though they're telling him stuff that he's not agreeing with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's kind of brash and he, you know, he jumps into war and everything, but they kind of just jump into his, what he's doing, like when Dawnstar just pushes him and he's like, oh, it's you. Okay, that's cool. And they're all, you know, smiley. It's like an old friendship episode where, you know, he saves, I guess, the future for his old friends from the future, but he kind of messes up the future for his old friend from the past.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I agree that there's a lot of respect between them. This is not like a Marvel team up.
No, no. He never fights the Legion.
They're at odds, but they're not fighting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And finally, we ask, if this were your first Legion comic, would you be interested in reading more? In other words, does the team up do its job?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think it would. I think it would. I mean, I would have liked having more Legionnaires in there. That would have been fun. Especially grab somebody with weirder powers, like a bouncing boy or a matter eater lad. You know, just to fun it up a bit. We're having only blasters, and blasters are cool and everything. But it was always fun to see, you know, these heroes with different powers being essential to teams, even though their powers aren't necessarily, you know, like on the offense and blasting.
Yeah, I think we could have used
maybe a Brainiac or
Brainiac 5 doing some of the mental heavy lifting. Maybe it's tough because you don't want to have just the Founders and then somehow Dawnstar. But yeah. Cosmic Boy with his magnetic powers would have been useful with the ships and have it like a different look to what he's doing than the other two.
Yeah. I always liked Cosmic Boy. I always did. Yeah.
And Chameleon Boy. There's more variety there in terms of look, et cetera. So there's many things they could have done. I'm not angry at what we got, but, you know, it could have been more interesting. So for me, if this is my first Legion comic, I think I'm intrigued by the possibility of other, like to find out what other members are and that future, but that could be true of any Legion special appearance.
Yeah, really.
Not necessarily in this story. All right, we'll take a break for a couple of promos and then we'll be back with our special features.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
The Legion of Superheroes through the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Baxter series, 5 years later, the reboot, the three-boot, the retro-boot, the animated series. We have banded together as the Legion of Super Bloggers to cover it all. Seek us out at legionofsuperbloggers.blogspot.com.
Why do you always have to say it that way?
Haven't you ever heard of a little thing called showmanship?
Coming soon from Amalgam Comics. In the next issue of Insect Queen and the Legion of Avengers, Lana Van Dyne breaks up with Giant Boy. Wanda the Witch Witch organizes a girls' night to cheer her up. But when Comp Ultron crashes the party, will everything hinge on Jim Pym saving the day after all? All that and more in this month's issue, only from Amalgam Comics.
We're back, and we start with our monthly feature, the bonus team-up, in which each of us proposes, in this case, a perfect Legion team-up.
Well, I'm going to propose something because I've been reading. I bought these comic books lately, and I love them. I'm going to pair the Legion of Superheroes and the Science Ninja Team Gatchaman.
G-Force.
The G-Force, yeah. Yeah.
G-Force, as we call them. Yeah.
Battle of the Planets, G-Force, or Mad Cave Studios. They have comic books, and they have these series. So I'm buying the trades, and I'm just loving them. So yeah, here's a bit of the story. While in the time bubble, heading back home after visiting Superboy, the Legion are swallowed up by a wormhole type thing in the space-time stream. They end up on 21st century Earth, where Galactor and his terrorist organization try to control the Legionnaires to destroy the Science Ninja Team. As they battle in a Marvel-style hero versus hero thing, the Legion realize that Galactor is the evil mastermind behind all of this. And then the Gatchaman people and the Legion join forces. I think Ken and Joe and June and Ryu and Jinpei would be all too cool with their, you know, bird suits. And they could actually influence the new Legion suits, for, you know, they could have this bird theme. I don't know. I was just having fun with it.
Yeah, I haven't thought about that old anime in years, even though, yes, I know there's like contemporary comics for it. I'm going to pick a single member to do my team up. From this issue, Dawnstar, and I'll team her up with Super Chief, the superpowered native character from the Old West.
Oh, that's cool.
So stranded in time, Donnie seeks the help of the only really superhero on Earth in this era, and they fight the Time Trapper's forces or, you know, something. Next up is Whatever Happened To? It's our unique segment to the DC Comics Presents portion of FW Team Up. And this time around, we ask, whatever happened to the Nirvanians?
Well, in my version, they discover vowels. They see their foolish ways and convert all of their material ships and weaponry to virtual reality, creating a virtual universe where they are continuously at war, and they have actually this whole community of people who are always, always fighting. But when they're off duty, they come back to this utopic, heavenly place that is war-free. And their war is only like a pastime.
I mean, they don't lose their culture after this war.
They still keep it, but they don't live it.
In my version of continuity, the Millennium War is like a couple of hundred years before the Legion's time. Like I want it like to end at that point. So they freeze dry their best warriors, including John Ross, until they're needed. And this allows Superman to later save John for Pete's sake and for John to return someday to fulfill his destiny. So they decant John and their other elites at the proper time. They ally with Earth because John is one of their generals, and they defeat the other galaxy fleet as destined, but at a cost. In defending the Milky Way, the Nirvanians almost all perish.
Oh, my.
This leads to the formation of the United Federation of Planets, as the other worlds realize they can't lean on these super warriors anymore, and they have to forge a defensive alliance.
Oh.
And that connects it to the Legion future.
Yeah, there we go. That's very smart. That's very Star Trek-ish of you.
Okay, now it's time for listener feedback on our previous episode, Together, in which we covered DC Comics Presents number 12, starring Superman and Mr. Miracle. So let me start with Gotham's Mansion. He says, isn't it weird that Steve Englehart was once Mr. Miracle's regular scripter, but didn't do that great a job on the character here? Of course, the fact that Englehart obviously doesn't get Mr. Miracle's character might explain why he only lasted a handful of issues on Mr. Miracle's title. As for Superman in this issue, if he were really this petty and had this much ego, he would probably have wiped out the human race by now. Well, plenty of comics tell that story.
Yeah. Martin Gray said, not a great comic, is it?
To the point. Dr. Ann says, my introduction to Mr. Miracle was the Englehart Rogers reboot. The full page ad grabbed me as a kid, and I truly loved that series, owning the issues, having them signed by Englehart at cons, and even buying the hardcover. Those are worth reading if you can find them. So seeing how he writes them here, which I bought off the spinner rack, makes no sense. Maybe DC told him, make it easy for the kids, Steve? Or is the New God stuff in the late 70s more complicated, or, you know, did it need a simplification like this?
Maybe they did, but, you know, based on the kids we were when we were young, I don't think simplifying would have been a good idea. Well, we like it complicated. Dick said, I started with Mr. Miracle in the first issue of Kirby's run. The relaunches haven't really done much for me after that. Inclined to agree about him. And his supporting cast, Big Barda and Oberon, are cool in their own right, being the most promising thing to come out of the Fourth World books.
Yeah, I would say, when I say the relaunches didn't do much for me, I do mean like those 70s relaunch, late 70s relaunches. Mm-hmm. Mileage may vary, but I think Mr. Miracle had like a fun series in the 80s, you know, after he joined Justice League International. There have been moments where I have liked these characters, you know. It's like, yeah. The latest New God series was pretty interesting, although it didn't really lift. The art was really interesting. There's nothing like Kirby. Bucky749 gives us his team up. It says, in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles universe, there's a character called Kirby, which is a tribute to Jack the King Kirby. And he shows up in Donatello's one-shot and the 2003 Turtles cartoon. He has the Kirby Stone of Power artifact that when tied to a pencil or pen can bring objects to life.
Ooh.
So Mr. Miracle teams up with essentially Jack Kirby.
That's cool. Nate the Great said, this was like those Superman Booster Gold team-ups years later, but Superman didn't quite seem as jealous and judgmental in those. Mr. Miracle just seemed desperate to prove himself here, possibly because Oberon wasn't in it much. At the very least, I'm surprised they didn't bring Carolyn back in later issues.
She was an intergang boss. I think this is a common problem in team-up books. Team-up books tend to create their own villains.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you never see them again, or you see them only in the team-up books, or they're not, you know, they don't become a big concern in other books. Part of that is probably because most team-up books in the Bronze Age have a rotating cast of writers.
Mm-hmm.
So like this issue is Paul Levitz, so is the next one because it's a follow-up. But before that, you know, like we had Steve Englehart last time, and we've had like, you know, it's always changing. So that doesn't really translate to keeping these villains around, or anyone who cares about these villains or thinks about them, because they didn't write them into like subplots that went on for a while. They were just very much one-shot people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Carolyn here is falls into that category. Let me keep going here. Chris Franklin says he had to comment on the brief discussion of the Mr. Miracle superpowers figure. He says, I was flummoxed by his barrel-chested design too, but I think it was to accommodate the mechanism of his power action feature, which required additional articulation in the shoulders for his arms to pop out sideways and escape the manacles included with him. Still clunky by Kenner's standards though. Like his arms would go out.
Yeah, yeah. It was
so you need some spring mechanisms in there.
Tim Price said, well, that was an okay team-up between Mr. Miracle and Superman Robot. No, really. It's the only explanation that makes sense. The robots were still around at this point.
We just saw them.
And they were always touchy. So Superman is off Earth during this story, probably hitting nightclubs with his buddy Vartox, and left a robot to fill in. It explains the insecurity, competitiveness with Scott, and using his powers badly. You know, now it kind of makes sense.
You can retcon any story you don't like by saying this.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And I think we should retcon every story you don't like with this. Then there's Miracle. And I don't think this is normal, but the narration and thought balloons were overly focused on his godly heritage. That just doesn't read like Mr. Miracle. And I agree. Yeah. But he goes on to say, well, this issue had issues, but your discussion was a delight as always. And Captain Entropy this time, he says he agrees with that last line.
Thank you both. There's only one letter left in the mailbag. It's Chris Pines. Says another great episode, blah, blah, blah. The Mr. Miracle, Big Barda relationship never gets old for me. I love how it flips the script with Barda as the powerhouse and Scott Free as the relatively weaker half. This was an odd issue, though. No one really felt like the characters I know. Thank God for Crisis. Burn these versions to the ground. I also enjoyed the bit of drama over Mr. Miracle's power set. Last episode, Bessin Siskoid pegged at 75 with his vintage Sergeant Fury comics, and now he's challenging his who's who knowledge. This is starting to sound like a podcast hosted by the Oasis Brothers. So you can throw in the, you know, the controversy about Dawnstar's speed to the list.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the next episode and the next round of drama. Well, here it is. Maybe Bess can explain improv to Siskoid. You know, funnily enough, Bess has explained improv to Siskoid, and Siskoid has explained improv to Bess.
Yes.
On several occasions.
Yes. We like these discussions.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, on podcasts, the first episode of my French language podcast, which is an interview show with improvisers from our province, the first episode, the guest was Bess.
Yeah.
And we needed like a topic that was very introductory. And so it was one of the basic building blocks of improv. And so you got to explain improv to me and the basics of improv to me and the audience.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I already knew a lot of the stuff.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. You were asking questions you already know answers to. So
that's the nature of podcasting or shows like that. Anyway. Yeah. So, okay. So, thanks for teaming up with me, Bass. Let me reveal that the next time we speak, we'll be covering DC Comics Presents number 14, Superman and Superboy. How can that happen?
I don't know. It's a mystery. I'm already intrigued.
A reminder that we do have a Patreon, so if you like this content and want more like it, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Check it out at patreon.com/FWPodcasts. And this month, we're proud to team up with our sponsor, Alan W. Wright, the Bold Outlaw. We also enjoy reading your thoughts. The best place for that is fireandwaterpodcast.com. We'll read your comments on this issue when Bess is back with us, but next month the cycle begins anew, and I'll be here with Shag as we continue his coverage of Marvel Team-Up with issue number 60. On that, see you next time for another amazing superhero team-up, because after all, justice
is a team effort.